Rabbi Irwin Kula is a prominent faith leader, public speaker, author, and educator. As president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership in New York City, he's been on this show numerous times and always, without exception, leaves us with something valuable to think about. On the brink of a new year, I'm very pleased to have Rabbi Kula join us again here on State of Belief Radio. Irwin, welcome.
Good to be here. Nice to hear your voice.
Well, same here. I'm still thinking about the story about Hanukkah that you gave us last year. I've thought about that story all year, so I'm glad to have you back. I'm ready to think about something else now.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't think the world has gotten immeasurably better, but I'd like to think that actually, even if it's incrementally so small that it's hard to pick up, things are still progressing and not regressing.
Well, how did we do in 2013 as a nation and as a people?
Oh, gosh. I think that here's a few things. One, I think that the polarization, political polarization, I think it has peaked out. I think people are really tired, and I think that we're going to begin to see a little bit improvement in that. And that's been at the tail end of the year, and I think that's hopeful. I think more people have health care today than they had a year ago. And with all the problems with the site and all the problems that we're talking about, we're now going to be fixing things with many, many more people having health care. And that's a very good thing. Less people have died in Iraq and Afghanistan, less Americans at least have died in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we're slowly pulling out of that and rethinking our relationships in the Middle East. I think that's good. I think it's really good that we didn't bomb Syria, that somehow, whether by luck, by grace, by mistake, or by strategy, we have figured out a way, even though Assad's still in power and it's very, very bad there, it's better than us having bombed. So I think that there are a lot of positive things. I think that internationally, I think the Pope changing the tone of the Catholic Church, I think we're going to see real good consequences to that. So I think that's good. So I think there have been a lot of good things. On the downside, I think the income inequality and the increase in poverty and a certain type of war on vulnerable people here, and maybe that's too tough of a word, but the war on vulnerable people, and that has, I think, increased. And I think that all of us have to look, Republican and Democrat, conservative and liberal, religious and secular, whatever our theories of justice are and whatever our understanding of government and public policy is, we really do have to ask what's going on with the social contract here.
And the dawn of a new year, I'm assuming we agree, is not going to erase that part of that ugly part of the picture with equality and poverty and the vulnerable. How do we get ready to try and change that situation as we go to a new year, Irwin?
I think there's always two modes. One is, you know, where do we pick in the external world? Where do we pick to operate to improve the situation? For some people, it will be a getting more engaged in a social service. For somebody else, it'll be getting involved politically in trying to create some sort of systemic change. Okay, so there's always an external act, and I think that every single one of us, no matter who we are, has to figure out what we are going to do that is going to mitigate some of the real poverty we have in this country and the real inequality we have in this country. And then there's the interior piece, and we need to be asking every single day ourselves, is this the kind of country we want to live in? And what that means is for everybody to say, whatever we think our policies are, obviously they're not working, okay? Whether we're liberal or conservative, our policies are not working here. And at the very least, the policies, if we're liberal and our policies haven't won out yet and haven't been really tried, then we have to ask, how are we arguing in the wrong way? How are we organizing in the wrong way? And that's I think this is the most serious question the country has to ask. And maybe another piece of that is we're going to have to ask ourselves seriously about the relationship between spectacle and real life. I think that the level of, and I will say this about myself too, that the level of seduction to entertainment and seduction to spectacle, and you know that the Kardashians are more interesting than poverty, that Lady Gaga is more interesting, you know, than the kids who are being killed every single day, that we have three new towns every single day in this country.
Yeah.
That something's off that we really have to ask. And I think maybe we should take a year of not blaming anybody else and just saying, what can I learn and do better towards whatever problem I want to deal with?
That is a wonderful piece of counsel. I think there's one question that I almost always ask you, and I have to do it again today. Erwin, I see you as a person who is really aware of the way things are, but I also see you as a person of great hope. When you describe the kind of challenges you've just described, where does the hope come from that motivates the change that needs to be done?
So I think that the first thing is, as a religious person, right, is that even if I can't answer that question every day for myself, the fact that I am a religious person, right, says to me that there is a bigger story here. I'm part of a larger drama here. Whatever is happening, okay, and I don't mean this in a, you know, a Papa God in the sky who's controlling, you know, I don't believe in that stuff, but there is a trajectory that is the human spirit that I, no matter what, that's my faith. So I start there, and I don't think it's a naive faith. I think that if I drop down one level, it comes from, well, let's really look at the span of history, okay? And let's look at how things really have improved. Maybe not have improved as much as we who have messianic dreams and messianic aspirations and prophetic influence, right? But really look. If you were a gay person in 1953, I'm 55 years old, in 1958, if you were a gay person, better to be a gay person in 1958 in America or in December 2013. If you were a woman, if you were a person of color, better to be in 1958 a person in America or in 2013. So we really have to have a little bit broader historical perspective to understand that we have gone through incredible, rapid, amazing change. And that's including in medicine and the varieties of ways in which we can communicate. And yes, even in war, less people are going to die in war in the 21st century than in any century previous. And if you read somebody like Steven Pinker, less people are dying of violence in the 20th century, less people died than in any century in history. So I think the broader perspective, what we used to call in the 60s the cosmic perspective, what we call as religious people, from God's perspective, no, things are actually getting better. It turns out what's happened as human beings is, in a sense, because so much has gotten better for so many people, we appropriately feel the gap now between what is and what could be. And what we have to do is not despair about that gap. The fact that we could feel that gap the way we do is part of the healthy process of moving the drama along. We cannot despair because we feel the gap. In some respects, we have to say, thank God, look at this gap we feel, because 50 years ago, we didn't even feel the gap in a lot of these areas. So that's where my hope comes from.
The dawn of a new year is obviously a symbolic transition, we hope, into new beginnings. For some people, surely it will be new beginnings. What do you think we should all be thinking about during this time? What's your counsel on the way we ought to be looking at the new year?
Here, I don't think I have any genius. I'll just put it this way. I think the most important thing, there's two most important things at a transition of a new year. One is we have to be grateful, right? Because gratitude is the quality of character that most allows us to function effectively in the world. So I think everybody needs to pick up the phone the last week, pick up the phone and actually thank some people in their lives and feel the experience of gratitude. And then the other thing is that one of the things that a new year allows us to do, and I don't care if that's a secular year or a religious new year, is it allows us to feel that we can do something new, that we can let go of some stuff, maybe a habit or maybe ask forgiveness from somebody or maybe just trust that even though things haven't gone so well, we can actually let go of stuff. And so it's two things, gratitude and a certain faith that we can change.
Rabbi Erwin Kula is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership in New York City, a past recipient of the Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award given by Interfaith Alliance. He's the author of the book Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. And I tell you, Erwin,
I got to tell you one more thing.
Tell me.
I got to tell you a new project that you know Rabbi Brad Hirschfeld too, because the two of us just launched a new social media site called thewisdomdaily.com.
My goodness.
And if you go to thewisdomdaily.com, every single day there's a piece of wisdom, even about politics or culture or religion or entertainment. And we just launched it, and it's one of the things I'm most proud of that we've done lately. So thewisdomdaily.com.
Terrific. I'm glad you added it. I want you to know that I am grateful for you and grateful for your participation on our program, and I will also get on with doing something new myself. Erwin, thanks for being with us, and happy new year.
Here's an unforgettable State of Belief moment from 2013. The Right Reverend Bishop John Shelby Spong on what religion has to do to be relevant in the 21st century.
Christianity as an organized religion is in a fast free fall. The biggest movement in the church today is not the rise of fundamentalism. It's the rise of the secular society, what I call the Church Alumni Association. They've gone out. And part of the problem for that is the church has not kept up with the times and has not engaged the issues that people are dealing with, so that when they come to church, they almost got to put their brains into a first century pretzel in order to understand worship, and they don't want to do that. So it's increasingly unpopular. When people like me and many others try to bring Christianity into the 21st century, the primary enemies we have are not the secular society. It's the right-wing religious who think we're violating everything about our religious background. I think that if you don't churn in that religious atmosphere and open up new possibilities, that there's no future in the Christian faith. The worldview of the 21st century is so far removed from the worldview of religion that they're thought to be mutually exclusive. Now, if you can separate the Christ experience from the explanation of the Christ experience, then you have a chance to talk about that experience in a different language. But if you can't separate them, if you've decided that the Bible, which is a first century explanation of the Christ experience, or the creeds, which are a fourth century explanation of the Christ experience, or the most of the liturgies of the churches, which come out of the 13th century, if those things are essential to the experience, then there's no way you're going to keep the experience alive.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Our time's running out just like the end of the year is running out. As the year draws to a close, I want to say a very special thank you to each listener who has made this show possible through generous financial support. We have faced our biggest challenges yet in this past year, and we're only here now because of you. We thank you for your commitment and support. It means more than words can say. I want to invite everyone else to visit us online at stateofbelief.com and consider making a financial contribution to the ongoing life and broadcast of this show. We'll use it wisely to keep State of Belief on the air and to expand the reach of this program at a time when so few voices represent an inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, sign up for our podcast. You'll find a lot more information about the topics discussed on this week's show and resources to help bring State of Belief to a radio station near you. Stay in touch with us throughout the week. I hope you will do that through Facebook and Twitter. There's also contact information available at stateofbelief.com. Our listener line is 202-681-4246. We encourage you, as always, to tell others about the show and encourage them to listen. There may even be some shows from this past year that you want to go back and listen to again. I hope you will. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.